All right, we are here to welcome you to Strange Love on Running Through the Jungle with From Between the Tackles and the Foxborough Frenzy, also for Hogan and Burge. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you for having us. I'm excited to get into this. I'm so happy football's back.
That's right. That's right. Week one, baby. Let's get into it.
Yeah, Strange Love, I know, is an odd name. But we're all about giving flowers here. I don't get too much. I don't get too upset or into the rivalries and hating on other fandoms. Like, it takes two teams to play football. Can't play one with just, you know, play a game with just one team. And I also grew up a Michigan fan in the state of Ohio, and now I'm a Bengals fan that lives in Pittsburgh. So I kind of have some sympathy.
You and I are going to have a little bit of a battle this weekend because I'm actually a Texas fan on top of being a Patriots fan. So I kind of hope your Michigan guys don't pull it off this week. No offense, but that's where I'm feeling.
That's an odd duo.
There's a really quick, funny story. One of my best friends growing up was a huge Michigan fan, and I just rubbed it in his face when Texas beat him in the Rose Bowl in 2003. Okay. And then I was like, you know what? I really like Texas. I'm going to root for them. And then they went undefeated, won the national championship. And then my life has been misery ever since then. So I made a terrible choice, if it makes you feel better.
Well, I do think this is going to be a tough game for Michigan coming up this week. Offense did not look too tantalizing against Fresno State. So I'm a little concerned. But I will be at the game. I'll be leaving tomorrow morning to head over there, do a little tailgating Saturday morning early. So it's fun. I have season tickets, so a lot of back and forth during the game. You'll see there's a lot of Michigan stuff back here.
I did happen to notice, and I was like, oh, I got to poke the bear there, because I was like, oh, I'm a big Texas guy. Usually I rock the Texas hat on streams, but I was like, I'll throw the Patriots one on today for good sport.
That'd have been great. Because I do keep them. I keep them arm's length, so I could have went to the well over here, got the Michigan hat out.
Excellent. Sure.
But hey, we're not here to talk college football. We're here to talk pro football, and specifically our Sunday matchup between our Cincinnati Bengals and your New England Patriots. Wanted to start off with just kind of an overview question. Kind of, what do you guys think about your coach? I did the can mayo cut the mustard. So I just want to get your guys' thoughts on Gerard Mayo as a coach. I know he was a fine player for you guys for years and quite a leader on the field. So what are your thoughts of him as a coach?
I know where I stand. I did not want the Patriots to move on from Bill Belichick at all. I was very upset about that. I didn't think that, you know, I felt the coach Bill was still able to do what he has done in the past. Obviously, the talent on the team has just plummeted since, you know who decided to depart town. And moving on from Bill, you know, me being a 35-year-old guy, I mean, that's kind of what I grew up with. As the head coach. So there were some sentimental opinions on that there. Going on to Gerard Mayo, it just wasn't a sexy hire for me. I was more hoping that they would pursue somebody else, somebody outside of the box, not the typical Patriot, you know, way of doing it, where they were going to completely clean house and change everything. And we didn't get that. Like, I would have loved to see them pursue Jim Harbaugh, for example. I would have loved to have seen them get into that kind of coaching search, versus just bringing everybody back, bringing in some retreads, and, you know, drafting Drake May. I'm trying to reserve judgment, because it's so often in the NFL that you see these NFL franchises move on from these head coaches way too fast, where they don't give them enough time to build their culture, build what they want to do, and install it into the franchise. So I'm trying to reserve judgment with that, with Gerard Mayo. My more of a concern is with some of the guys they surrounded him with, like Alex Van Pelt, for example. You know, you look at all these other offenses that have, and teams that have turned things around, your Bengals, the Rams, the 49ers, they've gone outside the box and they've brought in these whiz kids, so to speak, to run their offenses. I really wanted that to be brought in here, so that, you know, Drake May could start fresh and maybe not have to go through an offensive coordinator every year. Cause we saw what happened with that when Mac Jones was here, where basically had a different offensive coordinator every year he was here. And one year he had a defensive coordinator as his offensive coordinator. So I'm
tough situation.
Exactly. So I'm just trying to reserve judgment. I'm optimistic. I've already written off this season, you know, as a let's see what happens kind of deal. And let's see what happens going forward.
Yeah, I definitely get the it's what have you done for me lately right now in these leagues. And I mean, you know, not only with the coach's standpoint, but now they're like throwing rookie quarterbacks out there a lot and, you know, get it done or move on. It's kind of a weird situation. Hogan, what are your thoughts on Mayo as a coach?
Yeah, for me personally, I'm just waiting for judgment. You know, I agree with Burge on a lot of standpoints where I was a big Belichick guy. I believed he still has a lot in the tank, and coaching wise, I think the personnel department was drying up, and we all saw the results of that over the last few seasons with the Patriots. That being said, I want to see what Mayo does in the regular season in terms of what he brings to the table with this roster that they currently have, where I can see things going poorly because of the roster that they currently have. However, if he's able to, you know, change things up, maybe do some splash trickery, something, just because my whole point that really bothered me was like Mayo was kind of a Belichick guy, right? Like they brought him in, he coached with Belichick the last few years, he ran the defense, and granted the defense was the bright spot of the Patriots team the last two or three seasons when there wasn't a whole lot of bright spots to be had. But if you're replacing Belichick because he was the problem to bring in another clone of Bill Belichick, like why replace him in the first place? Bring in kind of like what Burge was saying was the new blood, where, you know, you get like a Zach Taylor or, you know, like you said, the coach there for the rim, Sean McVay, like somebody that can change something up and make it, you know, explosive, spicy, something that's going to change the culture that you want there. And for the first three preseason games that we watched with Mayo, I didn't see anything. And I know preseason is such a hard thing to judge because you're going to run vanilla stuff and you're going to not show your hand on a lot of things. But at the same time, if we're just in for another round of what was last year, I mean, granted, yeah, I'll love the first overall pick if we can grab it. But at the same time, like, make it exciting, because I wanted to turn my TV off before halftime almost through every game that the Patriots played last year. And that's something I haven't said in almost 30 years. And that's saying something.
Yeah, we have a hard time really judging what's going on in the preseason as well. Zach Taylor normally doesn't play starters at all. This year he did play them for one series of the first game. Uh-huh. We have no idea. So, it's very interesting. You got to watch more of the practices and see what they're doing.
Yeah,
but even then, it's hard. It's very vanilla. You're very true, very factual on that one. You know, before we get into breaking down, like, you know, I know Tim has some questions about breaking down our matchup and everything. Also interested, because I know you guys got some good young talent, I think. I think you've drafted pretty well, especially this past year. Do you have your eyes on someone for a breakout player on offense or defense for the Patriots this year?
I'll take this one for the first guy that comes to mind for me is really going to be Jalen Polk, which is the second round wide receiver that they took out of Washington, who, you know, a lot of people said he had the intangibles to possibly go in the first round. And from everything that we've seen, like you were regarding in practices and even in the preseason games, he looks really, really crisp out there, which is nice to see the Patriots hopefully hit on a receiver in the draft, which would be a first time, I think, since like Deion Branch in 2003, which is really, really saying something. But yeah, that's the big thing, is he's shown a lot of promise, whether it's been Jacoby Brissett playing quarterback or Drake May playing quarterback. And I just really, really hope that they're able to get on the same page with this kid. And I know a lot of people are high on Javon Baker as well, too. He's a fourth round draft pick from Central Florida, and they're saying that he has a lot of potential as well, where it's just such a mediocre wide receiver room that the Patriots have right now. You kind of need that guy to step up, because we don't have a Randy Moss, we don't have a Julian Edelman, we don't have those guys that were mainstays throughout the 20 years of dominance that the team had. And it'd be nice to see somebody break out, that especially where we drafted him or built him up in that aspect. So that's who I'm keeping an eye on. Whether it works out or not is, again, remains to be seen, but really, really hopeful in that regard.
For on my end here, defensively, I'm going to take a look at second-year player Keon White. Now, the Patriots on defense, they traded their star player this offseason in Matthew Judon. So the guy that was eating up all the sacks and the pass rushing is now a member of the Atlanta Falcons, who I think Patriots did a good job getting a third-round pick for him, for a guy who was 32 years old and didn't really play much last year because he was injured. So I love that transaction. But Keon White seems to fit in right where Matthew Judon was, you know, pass rushing and doing that whole thing there. Sorry, I lost my train of thought there for a second. He's a big guy, 6'5", 285. And despite the fact that he didn't really have the numbers last year to kind of back up with the sacks and everything, he figures to have a really expanded role in the defense this year. And I'd love to see him take a step forward, because in the flashes that you saw last year when he was out there, he was kind of all over the place at times during the season on a bad team. So he's my guy that I would love to see take a step forward, because we all know how the Patriots operate, and it's looking like it's going to continue this year. And that's that their defense is going to be kind of the anchor of the team to kind of keep them in games where they're going to have a shot to maybe pull out an upset here and there.
Yeah. All right. We will go to the keys to the game now. Tim, I know you had something a little specific on these keys to the game. You want to ask the gentleman here in New England?
Yeah.
What it was you were thinking?
Yeah. So I know you guys have, you know, you've had a lot of great offensive linemen that have came through New England. And, you know, Ted Karras is a Bengal now. Trent Brown is a Bengal now. I know your guys' center, I think he's like the only returning starter from last year. If I'm correct, I'm not sure, but I think I'm correct. How are you guys feeling? Like, I wanted your honest opinion. How are you feeling about your offensive line and the patchwork that Van Pelt and the coaches have put together for that offensive line for you guys coming up week one?
So I've already purchased a bunch of brown bags that I plan on cutting holes out of and wearing every Sunday. So that should be.
Yeah, I saw you starting to grab your microphone, squeeze it a little bit. I was like, oh, he's trying to juice the microphone. He's definitely got something for this one.
I was like, oh, he's pushing the triggers already. That's what you get me going, because, like, my lineman there, I'm a former offensive lineman myself. I used to coach offensive linemen, so my fatties are close to my heart, as I always call them, because they're my boys. But
yeah,
holy shnikes, it's not looking pretty. In regards to what you were asking, we do have David Andrews, the center, coming back. And then we also actually do have Mike Owenyu, who was re-signed, who's actually probably, I would argue, he's the best offensive lineman on the roster. He's very versatile. He played guard, tackle. He's been all over the place, and he was a great re-signing. We were very happy to have him. In regards, though, the offensive line is very, very patchwork, being nice about it. They don't look good. The all three preseason games that I watched, either Drake May or whatever quarterback was in got stepped on, whether it was pulling guards or pass blocking or something. One of the highlights from the last preseason game was Drake May losing his cleat because he got stepped on again and then throwing a dime to somebody. So it's like that's not a good start. The shotgun snaps have been all over the place. Lots of fumbles, bad center to QB transitions with that stuff, which, granted, I think will be cleaned up a lot when David Andrews plays, because, you know, he's the veteran savvy guy that can do all that. I'm not insanely worried about that. But again, health is another thing, because if David Andrews goes down, then it's a crapshoot. You know what I mean? So I'm very, very concerned, especially where they brought in veteran guys. And then the rookie that they brought in, I believe from Penn State, I want to say it's Caden Wallace is his name. He was a third round pick. Didn't show a lot in preseason or game or practices or anything like that. It's just very, very, like I said, patchwork is the nice way I'll put it. But I'm extremely nervous going forward, especially with you guys, where you got Trey Hendrickson over there. He's going to have a field day on whoever he lines up against there, because what is it, Okorafor that came over from the Steelers, or Verdian Lowe, whoever's in there is just, they're not built to handle a guy like Trey Hendrickson. When he had 17 and a half sacks, he might get 17 and a half sacks in on Sunday against us. I'm telling you right now, it's not going to be good, but I'm glad. I'm sure you guys will be loving that.
Yeah. Tim and I did pick him as a defensive player of the game pick.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, that's what my biggest concern was for on that left side of your guys' offensive line, because, you know, Trey Hendrickson could get put on an island and he might have a day. But anyways, but Berg, I wanted to ask you, I know that we got Hogan's opinion on the offensive line, and kind of the same question to you, but do you think that offensive line can create time for Brissett to throw the ball or even make holes for Stevenson to run through?
Short answer, I'm not confident. They just, I don't know why they didn't address more on the offensive line, especially investing such a high draft pick in the, you know, future of the franchise and Drake May. The offensive line had their share of issues last year, and that was with Trent Brown in there and guys healthy. David Andrews coming back in will shore up a little bit of the issues that we saw in the preseason, like Hogan alluded to, but he's an older guy and he's often injured. So in terms of the communication at the line of scrimmage, the, you know, the audibles, setting the protection, that's the kind of stuff that he's going to be able to bring to the table. He's not really going to be able to fix three misaligned left tackle penalties that were absolutely inexcusable in the preseason game.
If you have any influence whatsoever, there's a free agent out there named Carmen Jackson. Avoid him like the plague if you don't want a bunch of flags, okay?
Yeah. Ooh, I mean, at this point, I'll take anybody. I'll take anybody.
No. Hogan, get back in shape, buddy. You're going in before Carmen Jackson is.
Oh, man.
It's bad. It was not good. And listen, we sympathize as Bengals fans.
Yeah.
We've had some rough offensive line years. I think this is the most confident I've been in the offensive line, especially pass blocking, run blocking, so-so pass blocking. I'm pretty confident. Tim, I don't know if you share the same thought in that, but I think we finally got a decent offensive line.
Yeah, and no way I want, you know, I don't want you guys thinking I'm poking fun at you guys for your offensive line. That's not my case at all.
We're because, doing
you
know, it ourselves.
We're very sympathetic.
You know, I'm a Cincinnati Bengals fan, and like Brandon has stated before, breaking Burrow season one and season two, you know, we've seen it. We saw the offensive line woes, you know, but I do believe, and I've said it on all of our other shows, that this offensive line is the best offensive line that Joe Burrow has had in his entire career with the Bengals so far. But I do sympathize with you guys with your offensive line, and I hope, you know, as the time comes, they improve that offensive line and give Drake May, you know, some protection when he does finally get in there to get those snaps.
And it's wild to me sometimes how, like you said, Burge, they overlook, right? You have two very good running backs. You have a rookie quarterback. Overlooking that or not trying to shore that up or putting more resources into it can be frustrating. I truly am of the belief that if we just – the 4 years Joe Burrow's here – if we have an average offensive line, average NFL offensive line, the Bengals win their first Super Bowl in 2021 or 22. Yep. So it's tough, and I feel your woes and feel your pain. So definitely not poking at that. Hogan, what any other keys to victory you see or want to touch on or what the keys to the game here are for the Patriots?
For me personally, it's just I think a big thing is going to be how the defense comes back, barring all the injuries that we accrued last year. A lot of guys that are need to prove themselves once again, and it's going to be a great matchup in terms of what you guys bring offensively. You know, not to skip ahead or anything, depending on if Jamar Chase plays, I'd love to see that matchup with him versus a healthy Christian Gonzalez, because when Christian Gonzalez started off the season last year, he went toe to toe with AJ Brown, Tyreek Hill, and he looked like he was going to be potentially a defensive rookie of the year candidate, like with what he was able to do against those guys. And I would love to see that matchup. That being said, he also missed, you know, 75% or more of the season last year because of the injury that happened. So will he come back the same player? I don't know. I'd love to see that. But I think honestly, defensively, if Mayo can get to these guys the way he did the last few seasons to keep them in a low scoring game and kind of keep Burrow and Higgins and Moss and all those guys kind of bottled up a little bit. If we're able to keep it a low scoring game and our offense is somehow able to not get you know, a million illegal formations and Brissett can throw the ball a couple times, there could be a slight chance that we could pull an upset. But otherwise, I think, honestly, offensively, you guys have the firepower to take it to us, especially, like you said, that offensive line that you guys have now with Orlando Brown, Trent Brown, if he's motivated, if he's ready to go. Ted Karras is no slouch. We know him from New England days. And then even your guards there, Volson and Kappa. I mean, that's a very good offensive line that I would be more than okay with the Patriots having. But if you guys are able to establish the run, get Burrow, keep him upright, like you alluded to, it could be a very good game, or it could be a very, very one-sided game.
Yeah, I really, your Christian Gonzalez fact, like, I thought you guys stole him. What was he, what'd you get, 17, 18, somewhere in there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was a late second half, I want to say, of the first round.
Yeah, I would have had him. I had him as a top 10 pick. I would have taken him as the first corner off the board. Yeah. And the word that stuck out to me in our draft analysis of him was fluidity.
Yeah.
His hips were so fluid. Everything, nothing looked like a struggle. Even when he got out of place, getting back to it, didn't look like a struggle. It just looked fluid. So, yeah, I really like that young defensive back you have there. I think he's really good. Burge, any keys of the game you want to touch on?
Yeah, I mean, I'll go back to the offensive line and, you know, kind of what the Patriots' identity was the past couple of years. I kind of expect it to kind of be the same with Jacoby Brissett behind center. And that's their ability to run block and getting Ramondre Stevenson back to what he was 2 years ago and being able to kind of dictate the clock and the pace of the play on offense and being able to efficiently, you know, pick up 4 yards, 5 yards a carry, you know, at more often than not. And I think that is going to be the key for the Patriots offense to be able to score, to kind of open up the passing game for Jacoby Brissett, Jalen Polk, et cetera. And if they can't effectively run the ball, I don't think that they stand the chance, but I think if they're able to control the clock, kind of keep Joe Burrow and his offense kind of on the sideline more than, you know, what we're kind of expecting to happen, I think it could lead to some success for them, especially if the defense steps up and plays well.
That was a little bit of foreplay for Tim. He says run the damn ball about three times a show. So talking about Ramondre Stevens probably got him a little excited over there. We both agreed with you on our Running Through the Jungle podcast yesterday. 4.7 yards per carry is what the Bengals gave up last season. Can't do that. No. Can't do that. So we're hoping to see you a little under that. but yeah, if you get that running game going, it's going to be a different game. I truly believe that. Mm-hmm. Listen, we're at that point. We're going to take a quick break here, hear from our sponsors. We appreciate all you guys listening to us. Please like and subscribe. Share us. Tell a friend to tell a friend. If you love the NFL, this is the place to be. Come on over. We'll be right back after these messages.
All right, we're back. Between the tackles here with Running in the Jungle with some Strange Love. Had a blast talking that first half with you, but now it's our turn to start asking you Bengals guys some questions about how you feel your team is going into this season. And I'll say this, back in, I think it was the 2022 Super Bowl, I was all aboard the Bengals train. I wanted them to win that Super Bowl so bad. I was so disappointed, as I'm sure you both were too. But team looks a little bit different now, a couple of years removed from that Super Bowl. And a big name for the Bengals has left town and is now in Houston, and that's Joe Mixon. So I want to, Brandon, I'll toss it to you first. How do you feel about Zach Moss and Chase Brown kind of picking up where Joe Mixon was and kind of having a running back, I don't want to say by committee, but kind of that makeup?
So start this off by saying, I think Joe Mixon was a little bit of polarizing pick when we took him in the draft, but had a very good career for Cincinnati Bengals, was definitely a team first guy, and I appreciate his stay here. That said, the new regime that we're with, with Zach Taylor having Joe Burrow, We throw the ball 65% of the time. Joe Mixon, not really a pass blocking back. That wasn't kind of his shtick. He wasn't too good at that. He was got better as his career aged at catching the ball out of the background or catching the ball out of the backfield. But there's also, you know, when they went under center, they wanted to do that wide zone running and stuff. That wasn't his forte. So more so than his ability, I think it was the fit with what they were trying to do. I think you're going to see some more wide zone under center snaps, wide zone runs, and wide zone play action pass where you have a little bit of a naked boot or roll out Joe Burrow trying to throw the ball deep that way to buy a little more time. So I feel like the fit is better. I don't know. I don't think Zach Moss is a better running back than Joe Mixon. But I feel like the fit of Zach Moss and Chase Brown, who's, you know, second fastest speed last year in the league behind Tyreek Hill, can be exciting. So I think it's a better fit. We'll have to see if it pans out into better numbers.
So, Tim, next kind of piggyback off that. Do you envision a situation where Chase Brown kind of takes the leapfrog and becomes a starter at some point during the season and maybe kind of relegates Zach Moss almost to a backup role where he's kind of more, I don't want to say a bell cow, but kind of a three down back?
I mean, you know, that's really hard. That's a really hard question because during the during preseason, you know, we didn't really get to see a lot of the running backs. And, you know, last year it wasn't a lot of, you know, Chase Brown would come in on certain downs and, you know, get a handoff or get a quick screen pass to him, a check down or something. Could Chase Brown take over to be the number one? There's always a possibility because, you know, Zach Moss, he is a kind of a in between the tackles kind of guy. He can get outside, but I think, you know, as Brandon has said before, Chase Brown is one of those guys where you can hand it off and he can go out to the outside on the outside runs. You know, he's got the speed, but the in between tackles thing to make him a number one back, I don't know, because during preseason, I've seen they were handing the ball off to him in between the tackles, and he was kind of just getting the handoff and following forward. Like one thing that we discussed before the draft, one thing we were hoping to get was, you know, somebody that, you know, we have the Thunder and the Lightning with Zach and Chase Brown, but we needed the punch, the real, you know, the real bell cow, and that's what the Bengals really need, in my opinion. I know we're a, you know, throw the ball 65% of the time. Run game is an afterthought, or just to, you know, give Burrow and everybody a rest. You know, it's an afterthought. It always has been. It's one of my biggest complaints. You'll hear me throughout the whole season. I'll say, run the damn ball, because running the ball opens up the pass. And Brandon shakes his head because it's true, though. A run game is going to open up the pass. The pass is going to open up the run. It's either or. But if we don't run the ball enough, the pass is like running a vanilla run game all the time. You know what's coming, when it's coming, and it leaves nothing open. But to answer your question, I think it's going to stay like a 50-50 kind of thing between Zach and Chase probably the entire season. But you might see, you know, maybe some get, you know, Zach might get more handoffs or Chase gets more handoffs. But as of right now, as of what I see, it's really kind of hard to say, you know, 100% yes, you know, this is happening, because we really don't know. We don't know how the Bengals are going to come out, you know, with the whole offense or not. I don't know. And hopefully we will see more creativity and everything and see how it goes.
I don't know why I kind of strayed there. I was shaking my head because we don't run the ball enough. We were talking before we came on here about Hogan being a Texas fan. Me being a Michigan fan, my team ran the damn ball 32 straight times against Penn State last year.
Yeah, the Bengals, but the Bengals are not Michigan.
Yeah, Michigan isn't Michigan, I'm afraid, right now, but we'll see. We'll see. We'll see you Saturday.
Well, I appreciate that insight because I drafted both of them in my fantasy football draft to have my handcuffs. So I appreciate that insight. So if I'm going to be playing them, I'm gonna make sure I'm going to stick with Moss to start, I think.
Yeah.
Moving on to the offensive line, since that seems to be a pretty big theme here. We all know that, and we've discussed, that Trent Brown is now a member of the Bengals, and he was a member of the Patriots a couple of times. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, Brandon, how you feel about him. I know you seem pretty optimistic about the offensive line for the Bengals this year. I have a very adverse opinion of Trent Brown because of how I watched him play last year. And the last time he was here too, he gets into these situations where he gets lazy and he's, you know, the work ethic isn't there and he ends up turning into a shell of the kind of talent he can be given the, you know, ginormous size that he is as a guy. How do you feel about having him there? Are you concerned at all about any of that work ethic and laziness that you had that we personally have seen up here in New England a few times?
Yes. I was nervous about it, or a little uneasy about it when we signed Trent Brown. Obviously, good talent, great size, has some of those things going for him. But, you know, like you said, will that laziness show again? Had some on again, off again back injuries recently. So we're interested, you know, in keeping an eye on that. At the end of the day, though, I think he's just keeping that seat warm until Marius Mims is ready to go.
That's actually what I was going to ask about really quickly, because you guys took him in the first round and he seems like a absolute monster coming out of Georgia there. So would you actually, I guess this is kind of a follow-up question to that. If Trent Brown does struggle, show laziness or whatever, would you be okay with Mims kind of taking over that right tackle position going into this season? Or would you be more inclined to let him sit, learn, kind of like a, what we're hoping for with Drake May is have him learn the ropes before getting thrown into the fire, per se.
Yes, he's a monster. His footwork and technique was way past where I thought it was going to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. And after that first preseason game, you know, Tim, and I'll kind of relinquish this to you. My thought was, if he doesn't have the strained bicep or bicep muscle or pectoral. Bicep or pectoral. So if he didn't have a strained pectoral, I mean, I think it's a coin toss to see if he starts week one. Tim, I don't know what your thoughts were.
You know, I liked Mims. I liked that we drafted Mims. You know, and I've said that, you know, Mims has got a very high ceiling, and from everything that I've seen during training camp and preseason, I'm sorry, but I would bench Brown and let Mims start if he was not hurt. I have a feeling, this is what my feeling is, and I might be completely 100% wrong, but I believe that if Mims did not get the pectoral strain, he'd be starting on week one. That's just how I feel about it.
I think Trent Brown could, based upon the linemen we have here, the culture we have at Cincinnati, and you know, blocking for Joe Burrow and those kind of things. Could I see the best of him for a while, knowing someone's breathing down his neck? Sure, I could see that happening. Just as easy, I could see him, you know, becoming lazy again.
And I think the contract plays a big part in that as well, because when Trent Brown gets paid, that's usually when he gets lazy. He didn't exactly get a monster contract from you guys, so he's kind of got to prove it to earn another big payday for himself. So it'll be very interesting to see where he goes. I'll be following that closely.
And I was watching a interview with James Rapine and Orlando Brown Jr., our left tackle. Excellent guy. Excellent guy. But anyways, he was actually talking about Trent Brown and during the off season and, you know, when the Bengals were going to sign him. And they say that Trent Brown, when he did his first interview with the reporters, I wasn't impressed. I honestly was not impressed. He just kind of acted like he didn't care, or just nonchalantly like, you know. But from what I understand, Orlando Brown said that Trent Brown's a funny guy and he's working hard. He's seen him working hard, you know, during the off season and training camp and lifting weights and everything. So I'm hoping that Trent Brown proves, you know, all of us wrong and is working and take, you know, putting 110% in.
Fair enough, because I was telling Burge before we came on, actually, that, you know, he despises Trent Brown, and me being the offensive line softy that I am, I appreciated him for what he brought to us, especially in 2018 when we were able to steal that Super Bowl against the Rams there. But it's definitely a not a good path that he's gone down, where, like you said, when he gets paid, he turns into, you know, mush, it seems like. But unfortunately, I got to be the guy to segue into the whole paying part. We got to talk about your boy, Jamar Chase. I know he's shaking your head. You don't want to talk about it, but I got to ask.
You don't want to talk about your offensive line? No.
As much as I'd love to, I got to ask the question. With Jamar Chase, if he actually does end up holding out, whether it's multiple games or whatever situation arises where he's not on the field, are you guys confident with the receiving core that you have, especially where T. Higgins, little disgruntled? Obviously, we all know about the franchise tag and that whole situation, and obviously he's playing. There's no doubt about that. But I guess that my question is, if Jamar Chase could potentially miss multiple games, how do you guys feel about the receiving core for Cincinnati going forward?
Tim?
Well, not all at once.
Well, you know what? I'm gonna be honest with you. This whole Jamar Chase thing has been an ongoing subject piece for us for the last couple of weeks. You know, it's just been nonstop. I want to ram my head up against the wall and be like, just sign Jamar Chase already and get this over with. One thing that Brandon and I and Justin have discussed on Running Through the Jungle, you know, pay the man now, because if you wait, we're going to be paying him a lot more than what he probably wants now than later. So to answer your question is, I believe that the Cincinnati Bengals can win without Jamar Chase. Jamar Chase has been at practice. If you guys were not aware, he was at practice on Wednesday. Yeah, so he started practicing on Wednesday. He was limited today, and he was at practice today. So we're under the assumption there's a 50-50 chance that Jamar is playing on Sunday against the Patriots. But if he did not, yes, I do have the confidence that Joe has the weapons. We have T. Higgins. We have Yoshi. We have Charlie Jones. We have Trent Irwin. We have Jermaine Burton, Gesicki. You know, we have the weapons. We have Moss and Brown. Tanner Hudson. You know, we have Eric All. There's plenty of weapons out there for him to throw to. And you know, like, one thing that we want everybody to understand is, you know, I believe that Jamar Chase is going to get paid. I feel bad that T. Higgins got franchise tag, but it was either we pay Jamar Chase or we pay T. Higgins.
Yeah.
You can't pay both unless a miracle happens and they do some, you know, some magic miracle work with salaries. But I believe, yes, we can still win without Jamar Chase.
Yeah, we were talking about salary cap in depth, obviously, over the past year, because the crystal ball was, we have three players that are going to make $100-105 million. I was so wrong. We have two players that are going to make $95 million. Like, it's, you start looking at the salary cap as a percentage. The players get 48%. That is continually going up. We already know what's going on with the new television deals and streaming deals and all that stuff. In 2 years, the salary cap's going to be about $300 million. So paying $40 million aggregates to $31 million over 6 years of control to get a four-year extension done for Jamar Chase. He's 24 years old. He's one of the top five wide receivers in the game, and you can have control of him and Joe Burrow through 2029. There's a pen.
No brainer.
Sign it. Sign the deal. To me. Now, All that said, if you saw me bury my head after I asked you guys a question, I had my head buried over here. I had a notification, Ian Rappaport, about 20 minutes before we went on to record this, said that, reported that Ja'Marr Chase is a professional and is expected to play in the first game against the Patriots. So a little bit, you know, and that was Joe Burrow that said that gave him that information. Mm-hmm. So I feel better. You know, Joe Burrow, at the end of the day, Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase are extremely tight, very good friends. And I think that has a lot to do with it. And I also think it has a lot to do with the reason why the Jesse Bates to Trey Hendrickson, the T. Higgins has all mm-hmm. fallen the way it has. Because I think they've already made up their mind that Jamar's that guy. He's a game changer with Ja'Marr, Joe Burrow, and Ja'Marr and Joe being as tight as they are. I think that's the core, the two that you got to keep together on that side. And much like I've emulated and appreciated the Patriot dynasty and a lot of how you guys ran that front office, getting off of some very, good players, fan favorites at times, where you got off of Richard Seymour a couple years before maybe you needed to, but you didn't handcuff yourself financially with a 30-year-old defensive lineman for 4 years. A lot of those I thought were very smart moves, and making moves and getting the right pieces of the puzzle in, rather it be draft or rather it be because you playing at a high level attracts high-end talent to come and play for a little bit less than maybe they would get on an open market. First time we're starting to see that now in Cincinnati Bengal history, as far as I can remember, with Orlando Brown coming in and taking less than he could have gotten on the open market. And some other players, I think, are starting to follow suit. So I appreciate what the Patriots have done there, and I'm hoping that we pay the right guys the right amounts now and do the right things with those other pieces like you guys have in the past.
I think a big part of that, too, is what you alluded to with being Joe Burrow and Chase being kind of like those once-in-a-generation talents, right? Well, I mean, that was a big thing, obviously, for the Patriots for a long time that we had Tom Brady, and a lot of people wanted to come play here with him because it was just, if you had Brady and you had Belichick, the mantra was you always had a chance at a championship. And I think the big thing that you guys are building over there with Cincinnati, that's just, you know, if everybody can stay healthy, and that's the biggest thing, is like when you guys are healthy, is you're a scary, scary team with Burrow, Chase, Higgins, like that. Just, there's a reason why you guys went on the run that you did in 2022. And I mean, that was like you talked about, if that offensive line can keep him upright and get that run game going, because didn't, if I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that playoff game against Tennessee, didn't Burrow get sacked like 9 times? It was like a record that he got sacked like 9 times and you still won the game, which is like, that's unheard of. That's unheard of.
That's the winning field goal right there, signed by Money Mac.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. McPherson. Yeah, he's a great kicker. I wish we had somebody like that. Unfortunately, we had Chad freaking Ryland, who
We paid him too.
That's if you get a good kicker, keep him as long as you can. We know about the woes of that already. But I do believe honestly that you guys have something special up there with Burrow for sure. Because I mean, it's especially in today's day and age with the NFL where the quarterbacks, especially this offseason, I don't know if you guys have a comment on this, but we've been talking about on Between the Tackles where it's the mediocre quarterbacks are getting the money bags now. And it's guys that are unproven, whether it's Trevor Lawrence, Jared Goff, like, and no disrespect to them, I'm not saying they're bad players, but guys who don't win playoff games regularly or constantly go to the Super Bowl are just making hand over fist, and it's crazy to me.
Yeah, I feel like there's a difference between being a Pro Bowler and being an All Pro, and they're paying these guys like they're all pros. It was mm-hmm. weird to see Joe Burrow get his extension, and then within 6 months it seemed like it was a deal.
Exactly. Yeah, it's almost looking like Mahomes' deal that was like what, a half a billion or something crazy over 10 years is now like one of the cheapest deals in the NFL. It's just, it's mind-blowing to me. Mm-hmm. But again, like I said, it's a testament to you guys where, you know, granted that Cincinnati used to be a laughing stock for a little while where you guys didn't have the playoff runs. I think it was Marvin Lewis who I go to my grave saying, I think Marvin Lewis must have had dirty pictures of somebody because I don't know how he kept that job as long as he did. But no, what you guys have got going up there now with Zach Taylor running the show. And like I said, Burrow, Chase, everybody staying healthy and hopefully being happy. You guys could be a very, very scary team for a long time.
Yeah, Zach still makes me pull my hair out every once in a while.
Yes.
So, I mean, not because he doesn't run the ball, just sooner or later, I'd like him just to be the head coach and have an offensive coordinator that calls plays. Mm-hmm. That's just me though. You know what I mean? I didn't want my, I was in the restaurant business for 26 years. I never wanted my executive chef just to work on the line the whole time. You lose vision of what everything else that's going on around you. You can't see some of the idiosyncrasies. You may not know where you need to coach things up. You may not know where you need to get somebody a little stronger or give somebody a raise or penalty. You miss some of those things when you're really engulfed in calling the plays. I personally wish he would step back from it. So, Tim, any thoughts on coach before we put a bow on this thing?
I don't really have much to say. You know, I know Zach likes his offensive coordinators up in the box and, you know, not down in the field. And it's always been it was always a big thing when Brian Callahan was our OC. You know, we always knew that Zach was calling the plays and, you know, and Brian Callahan was. And I know during the off season there was a statement made that, you know, he was going to let Brian Callahan call the offense this coming year, but Brian Callahan went to the Tennessee instead. Do I see it eventually happening? No. I think Zach's going to continue to call the offense and hopefully it pays off for us. Hey, that's all I can really say.
Andy Reid. I mean, you can't have success doing it. I'm just,
you can.
My preference, can. You know. Gentlemen, before we get into predictions, anything else you want to cover?
I was just going to say, as long as you guys don't have a defensive coordinator calling your offensive plays, you might be okay. we know about that. We know about that all too well. So as long as you don't have Matt Patricia on your team, you're okay.
Yes. So I grew up literally halfway in between Cincinnati and Detroit, and that's my fandom is split there. So the Lions hold a soft spot in my heart. So that man also agitated me for a few years. But I'll digress.
Understandable.
Well, let's get to some game predictions. You know, we did ours yesterday. I don't know if you guys have done yours, announced them to the world yet or not. I'll let you go first. Get your prediction out there. Just, we normally do offensive and defensive player of the game. Give me one player of the game and give me your score. Do you need me to read it yesterday? I got it here.
No, I know what my picks was. I'm sorry, guys, but it's okay. I picked the Bengals to win 31-17. Unfortunately, I think if Joe Burrow gets cooking and, you know, has that rust knocked off and the offense starts going nuts. You know, I know you guys got five returning DBs from last year, but is it enough to stop Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins? I don't think so. So I said 31-17, and my game ball is going to go for the offense, of course, to Joe Burrow. I think Joe Burrow starts off the season with his revenge tour and actually proves to the NFL and the haters out there that, you know, Joe Burrow's back and, you know, he's not a glass house.
Tim, that remind me, guys, if either of you could get Jabril Peppers autograph for me, that'd be great. Birch, we'll throw it over to you. What's your prediction? Oh, Tim, you didn't give me a MVP. Who's your player of the game?
Joe Burrow.
Joe Burrow? Okay. Got it.
Yeah, Joe Burrow.
Birch. What do you got?
I'm going to be close with you on that there, Tim. I have the Bengals winning 21-7. I don't think the Patriots offense is really going to have anything figured out with Jacoby Brissett. And I think that there's going to be a lot of rust and a lot of growing pains this season, that it's going to take a few weeks before we see any real bright spots from the Patriots offense. And, you know, going with the theme of the show, I'm going to give my game ball to Trey Hendrickson. I think he's going to eat the Patriots offensive line alive. And I just think that it's just not going to be pretty for the Patriots. And I think it's going to be kind of, you know, reflective of the offseason and the fact that they left all their money on the table and that they didn't address major glaring needs with real talent. So 21-10, I'm going to go with and I'm going to go a little bit lower than you, Tim, because it is the first game of the season and right. You kind of expect that rust to show up, and it may be some sloppy football at times throughout the game for both teams.
Burge, I do an AFC North show on the Steel Curtain, and I'm not used to that kind of objectivity. So I'm a little stunned. I don't know what to do. yeah, I don't know. I'm not subject to that normally. Normally I'm talking,
I've punted on the season. I've already punted the piece
Bowl.
With it.
I don't know if you knew this, but the Steelers are going to the Super Bowl. You should bet on. Hogan, more optimism from you, or what are your thoughts on the game? Give me a projection and a player of the game.
Burge kind of stole my thunder. I was thinking 24-10 because I was like, oh, that sounds pretty good. But I could be the spoiler and say that the Patriots are actually going to pull off the upset. But I'm not going to do that. I'm not dumb enough to pull that trigger. So I'm going to stick to my guns, and I'm going to say it's probably going to be 21-24 and 10 points if we're lucky. Because like I said, it's the big thing is this offense, I just don't trust it. As much as I appreciate Jacoby and, you know, this being his second tour with the team, I'd love to see it be successful and for him to, you know, establish himself, be that bridge guy before Drake May comes in. I don't think it's going to happen. I do think Trey Hendrickson's going to have a field day, because no matter who he lines up against, he, like I said, alluded to earlier, he could probably have 17 sacks tomorrow, because this offensive line is just not built to sustain. And I guess the only thing that I could see being, you know, a surprise for us is if Ramondre is able to get going, where, like you said earlier, you guys let up 4.7 yards a carry last year to opposing running backs. If Ramondre comes back to form after being injured for the later part of last year, and he's able to get the ball going, maybe we could surprise it, maybe make it a little lower scoring, like I was alluding to, if the defense gets into the game as well. But at the end of the day, with the pedigree that you guys have there in Cincinnati, I can't see our defense holding on the entire game that the way that they could if our offense was able to complement them, which they will not be able to do. Give me 21-10, knock some rust off the offseason. You guys will get going and put up some points later on in the year, I think, and we'll see if we can put any points up going on later in the year. If I get to pick a player of the game, honestly, as much as I think it would be good to see Burrow get going, I could see Zach Moss taken over as well, or if he gets the run game established, gets a couple of vulture touchdowns down there on the goal line, you know, two or three of them, maybe. It's always, like I said, week one always seems to be a little bit of a dirty ball, because you don't know if guys got to knock the rust off or what have you, and especially if Jamar is the question mark, like I said, not trying to bug that one again, but if he's you know, got to get going as well, I could see the run game being really big for both sides. So give me Zach Moss in a low scoring game.
All right. Well, I listen, I'm going to put you on the spot, Hogan, because I don't want you guys to go out on a sour note like that. So I'm going to give you a bonus prediction. Saturday at the Big House, Fox Noon kickoff. I know you're a Texas fan. Give me your prediction. Texas versus Michigan. Let me have it.
Ooh, okay. Well, we put up, I want to say it was like 56-0 against Colorado State. And you guys struggled a little bit on week one. But I do like my Texas boys to come into the Big House and hopefully pull off the, I don't know if it would really be an upset, because I think we're number four in the country right now.
So going into the season, that game was Michigan was favored by 2.5. And right now it's a 7-point spread. Texas is favored.
Wow. Yeah.
9.5-point swing in 1 week.
So I like that a lot, because we went into I got my hopes up with this team, especially last year when we went into Alabama and we beat them in their home field. That gave me a lot of confidence going forward. So give me a good game where I think you guys are going to give us a fight for sure. Let me say it's going to be 45-35 Texas.
All right. See, there you go. I let you go out on a high note.
Well, I appreciate that because as a Pats fan, I need some optimism this year. So hopefully Texas can bring that for me.
Well, I also had the Bengals winning 27-10 was the number I landed on. And I picked Trey Hendrickson as the player of the game with two sacks and one forced fumble, five pressures. So there we are. Well, gentlemen, I appreciate you guys rocking with us. Anytime we play, welcome to come back. I like doing the crossover stuff, the strange love, giving people their flowers. Tell everybody where they can find you and days and times and all that good stuff.
Absolutely. Well, for anybody out there, Patriots fans, hopefully for myself, Hogan, I am on Twitter, X, or whatever the heck it's called now, at NHogan7171, hosting the newest Patriots show on Fans First Sports Network, and that is Foxborough Frenzy. So any Patriots news that you want to get there, that's where I'm located. You can hit me on the socials for that. And also, at the same time, still doing the Between the Tackles with my good buddy Burge over here, and you can find us on all the socials at, I believe it's Tackle Pod. Burge, if you want to take that away.
Tackles Pod. That's Instagram, X, and YouTube. We got shorts and everything going up for that. I'm on X at Burge the Goalie. It's on the screen here. B-U-R-G the Goalie.
I want to call it Between Two Tackles so bad because of Between Two Ferns. But I digress. Hey, we appreciate you guys. Appreciate you, Tim. Thanks for coming in as usual. And thanks for all of you listeners out there. All season long, we'll be doing these crossovers, Strange Love. We do have someone lined up next week for the Kansas City Chiefs. Oof. Man, can't believe that's happening already. Football is back, gentlemen. It doesn't get any better than that. We appreciate you guys. Check us out anytime you can over here at Running Through the Jungle, and we're out of here.